Michael and Sally, Jim, Dwight, Creed, Carl, Andy, and Kelly, for your business paper needs. Dunder Mifflin,
the People Person's Paper Podcast.
Dunder Mifflin,
the People Person's Paper Podcast.
Dunder Mifflin,
the People Person's Paper Podcast.
Time out.
Welcome to the People Person Paper Podcast, the show where we are going episode by episode through every episode of the hit NBC sitcom The Office. My name is Hilton Price. With me every episode is my co-host Brian Sittler.
Let's do another episode.
Let's do another one. Let's wrap up an arc.
Let's wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up. Let's bring back the guest who's been with us for this whole arc. Alyssa Steen is back.
We're wrapping up probably my least favorite romance.
It's
yes.
It might be in many ways my favorite. I mean, obviously Holly is the goat, but we love Holly.
Yes. But, yeah, that's by design.
But I like this because this is one of the ones where Michael feels like he's on even footing with her until we learn about other guy. Like they're kind of into each other.
He thinks he's on equal footing. She's really the puppet master. Yeah.
True.
Because he's the mistress.
He is the mistress.
And
which he learned last episode.
At the end of the episode, toward the end when he's having his silent moment realization, you actually do see some growth. I mean, what must have seemed impossible back in season one.
You're talking about the car.
I'm talking about the car and how he comes and he's like, you know, and he actually says, you know, I feel mature.
Yeah.
Growth. Cause, you know, he's a kid. I mean, he's Michael the kid. I mean,
to me, that was his only likable moment this entire episode.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. That's
the only one that I'm like, okay.
And it's interesting. Right.
He goes deep down.
Well, and we haven't seen him do this. You know, Michael often fails in being ignorant, in having lack of self-awareness. I don't mean ignorant as an insult, just unknowing.
And here
he is very much choosing to do the wrong thing.
I mean, I think a lot of the times Michael is the epitome of ignorance is bliss.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, and he's in blissful ignorance most of the time until, like you said, he chooses or his dark side.
Yeah.
And he embraces it, you know, for like.
Then he's in blissful bad.
Now, blissful. and the office, you know, they're pretty repelled by him too. And it's pretty across the board.
It's universal. We don't see that a lot.
You know what's interesting? And I wrote this down. This is like the one episode where I feel like the entire office is the straight man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the moment where Ryan's not.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's true. Right. Ryan gets a shot. And of course, there's always Kevin with the boing. You know, like there's definitely still some silliness and some office antics.
They're still able to pull out some great funny stuff, but even within all of the horrible stuff.
Moment that it is confirmed that he is still dating her, everyone's like,
Come on, true.
Man.
Oh, and he had the gumption to go talk to her husband.
Well,
shake his hand and
poorly, weakly, through a fence.
Yes, and even Kevin's like, that's crazy. You know, even I think Stanley's a little taken aback too.
Yeah,
he's mostly just fed up, and everybody, you know, I love it. He says, you know, everybody's made up their mind, just drop it.
Yeah, no one's changing it.
It's a very Stanley line, and you know, it's
fitting for this year of politics. But
absolutely,
we don't need to talk about that.
That's right.
But yeah, but no, with Stanley, definitely, and interesting too, because Stanley is someone who not only is infidelitous, but
which Michael points out,
but he's good at it.
He is good, and he keeps it low. He keeps it on the low.
Yeah, not that that's good to be good at that.
No,
you know what I mean. Like
he's not trying to drag everybody else into it.
When Michael's not accidentally calling his wife, Christine or whatever
Cynthia.
Cynthia, thank you. Yeah. Then Stanley's getting away with it.
He is.
He's taking her to weddings.
getting snark from Phyllis.
Yeah,
who cheats on her diet?
That's true.
No, but Michael's not going to say anything about that.
Well, I got to talk about that too. Like. Phyllis, that was kind of, I'm glad Michael pulled that quick turn because I feel like Phyllis is honorable to Bob.
Oh, she is. Yeah.
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 She does try to entice other men so that Bob will beat them up.
Of course.
But that's still loyalty to Bob.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's just her being, you know, that's just Phyllis being evil in her heart.
She has her own little level of evil.
It's the mean girl, Phyllis.
Yeah. Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But she's still disgusted by Michael, she can't look at him, like literally.
Yeah.
He's having to sign that form.
I love that too.
The sassy turn.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. She just walks out.
Well, and she does the thing where it's like he has control over so much of their lives, but he cannot make them acknowledge him. You know, that's just a thing he can't do. No. So she had so much power in that scene in a situation where he's still her boss. And what a beautiful way to exhibit her disgust. Like, I really, sure. It was a powerful moment.
It was. And he, I mean, at his core, he wants to be liked.
Well, does he want to be liked? He needs to be liked.
He needs,
yeah.
And praised.
More than a desire.
Yeah. Or, it's a some need, like this need to be praised.
On the other hand, while he needs to be liked, he really, really, really hates Toby.
He does. Well, no, and I think that sets up because it seems like such a random opening.
Yeah.
But they're actually laughing along with his disdain of Toby, which because they're all going to die of boredom talking about radon.
Yeah.
Best kids.
I love that open where his joke kills.
It kills. Honestly, I think it sets up that dichotomy how the office turns on him.
Yeah.
Later in the episode.
It's good. It is right? One of my favorite cold opens. It is the quote.
Creepy little disc.
It is the quote of if I was in a room with Bin Laden, Hitler, and Toby, and I had a gun with two bullets, I'd shoot Toby twice.
The way these lawyers are like, no, too far. Even Dwight.
You're being really funny, and then you took it too far.
Who later exemplifies how to pull it off.
And Andy is...
Dwight, he's too far, but also the strategist.
I would have done the what Indiana Jones does in Last Crusade. We all remember that. He just did a line straight through like five Nazis.
Yeah.
But... Who am I to say? Anyway. I
mean, Andy is so excited to play Bin Laden. It's so funny.
He's a fist pump.
He just loves to be in a theater production. Anytime he can act.
He's been chosen. That's the thing.
Yeah. There's a lot of theater references in this episode.
Yeah. How he would prefer to play a cuckold on stage.
Yeah.
Yes. Then when they're at the baseball field, when he's like, stage right or stage left?
Because he was in he was in Damn Yankees. I'm assuming that's a production of some kind.
Yeah,
that has baseball. I mean, Yankees is a baseball thing, but
he doesn't know
what he's talking about. That's a kind of a funny Michael within being disgusting. You don't know what you're talking
about. This is prior to Sweeney Todd too.
Yeah.
Oh yes it is, because that's next season.
Yeah, that's true. So Andy's we're getting some of his stage info without even knowing that. Wow, that's interesting. I didn't realize that.
It's they're dropping little hints along the way that we're gonna find that bloom into a whole episode next season.
Sweeney Todd, that episode's a trip.
I can see that being a polarizing one too, but it's funny.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good. It's a really good Andy episode.
Yeah, really.
It's a great button at the very end with Michael on stage.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Yeah, with the Law and Order. Oh, I love that.
Dun, 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 dun.
Okay, that's next.
But meanwhile, the radon test kit's not going over well.
It's supposed to be Toby's. This is Toby's moment.
Yeah.
And it's just destroyed
all
over. I mean, and the radon test kit's been a thing, an ongoing theme. The silent killers, who apparently really is Toby.
Michael has the line.
It's an ant trap.
Reed has the moment.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And also a really unusual dated reference to the movie Wanted.
James McAvoy?
With James McAvoy, exactly.
I read about it.
You know,
like didn't see it, just like I haven't seen Obsessed, featuring Beyonce and Ali Larter.
I haven't seen that either.
And Office alum Idris Elba.
Oh, yeah.
Had to be an in joke.
That had to be, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, yes.
So I just love that Michael thinks that no matter what situation he's in, he is always the Beyonce.
I am Beyonce. I literally wrote down that quote because I thought it was great. I did not like that Michael referenced that Dwight and Angela were sleeping together while she was engaged to Andy. Like, why would you need to? Stanley did it to himself. Why did you need to bring Andy in?
Well, because he was trying to justify it because he had the he's like, I had to tell him.
Yeah.
It's not a good thing.
No, it's not. No, he has all sorts of false, he has horrible justifications in this whole thing.
Yeah.
Him trying to paint the victim. Coach,
he's finally found a girl that he likes, that likes him. They're having,
he knows how rare that is.
They're having sex that he thinks is so naughty he can't even feel comfortable doing it in his own condo, which as a condo owner, oh god, we've made mistakes. So He's trying to keep his perfect situation.
And they've both discussed it, and they're both okay with it.
Yeah.
You know, and I realized, you know,
I'm sure she's okay with it.
Yeah, she's cheating.
This ain't her first cheating rodeo.
No.
But I forgot how little she is in this episode.
Me too.
It's
one scene.
Yeah. And she doesn't get to talk, just a reaction, which.
No. And she kills it.
Killed it, of course.
It's not her episode, though.
No, it's really not.
But you know, and you know that, like, her level of, she is disappointed, but she's not destroyed, and she just kind of moves on. Like, she starts her car, and she's like, all right.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, it's almost like she knew it was inevitable.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, she's just like, okay.
Right.
I get it.
Yeah. And you know, probably this probably ain't the first time that result happened.
Probably maybe, not.
You know?
I would be hard pressed to believe that Michael was the first that she chose to cheat on her husband with.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
You mean Sheldon? Oh wait, Sheldon and what? Michael Sheldon and Andy is.
We got one for
Trevor.
Andy.
Trevor.
Was it Trevor?
Sheldon research. Trevor. Yeah, he doesn't say it, but then there's an outtake where, like, Andy's giving the backstory of Trevor, his character.
Oh, okay.
It's. I'm kind of glad they cut it. It wasn't funny. I mean, for time.
But it really is this is really clearly building on an Andy likes the theater storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like they really got to play more into it when we get to Sweeney Todd next season.
And they are established, like, Andy does have a moral center, I suppose, because he's really trying to, the thing about infidelity is, you know, like, he's really, I think they're trying to set up some positive, more positive vibes for Andy.
Well, and I think he's definitely, like, pushing Michael a little bit too far.
Oh, sure.
He's like, let's go to his baseball game. That's a bad idea. I understand why you're doing it. I get it.
Right.
Bad idea.
Horrible idea. Didn't really work, I guess, at first.
Yeah.
But, you know, but the whole Andy stuff is sort of, we have the Dwight Angela storyline, which is kind of my favorite storyline
so
of this
good.
Whole
It's so funny.
It's great because Dwight brings in the mediator to try and take control of the situation,
yep.
Loses complete control of the situation, only to realize that in the end, he can win it just by giving Angela the one thing she wants, which is just a little intimacy.
Five times.
Yeah.
Yeah. With a card, with a punch card.
Girl just trying to reliably get off. I can't hate that for her.
I get that. And it's sort of finishing the arc from back in where Donna works, not Dave and Buster's, with the fake
Sid and Buster.
Sid and Dexter,
yeah.
Yeah. So that's when Angela's saying, I'll see you in court. Mm-hmm. But they found another way.
Yeah.
Thankfully, with a mediator.
Can you imagine a case involving those two and an actual judge?
Oh, well,
it would be so good.
It would be like the end of this one where the mediator's like, guys, I can't be a witness to this. This is like prostitution, you know? Like, the judge would probably end up having to throw them both in jail for a minute.
Yeah, they wouldn't get too far before
they would just be like, dismissed.
Get the hell out of here.
Perverts, get out of my courtroom.
What are we replicants? What?
Yeah.
Benjamin Button.
Do love that he had a Blade Runner scenario ready to go.
All of the scenarios.
Yeah, all of the same page.
What's the phrase at the start?
Matrix reference.
Matrix. Yeah. Oh, and the little Dwight. And awesome writing right here with his Dwight's little interjections, which we can't know unless we're unplugged in the future.
Meanwhile, they've moved on. They're talking about something else at that point, and he's still going on about Neo waking up in the pod.
I wonder if that was one of the what the office ladies called the candy bag takes, and that was and on the set, right? Or Lorraine Wilson ad lib.
Yes,
yeah,
they actually I did get a chance to listen to the office ladies in this one, and the writer or the director, I can't remember, it was Aaron Shure, not related to Mike Shure.
Oh, interesting.
The writer, he wrote it. Randall Einhorn directed, but he said that Dwight actually took him aside and was took him aside because it was it wasn't hitting quite like how Rain thought it should hit. And actually the writer had his child there that day who was just wanting a cookie or something and was kind of right there as they were negotiating this scene. So in a scene with a negotiation, the writer was negotiating what they were going to do with Rain. And it's like they did a rewrite, and you know, they really worked on that. I mean, they put a lot of work in.
They notoriously would.
It's crazy.
Like, do the scene as written, and then do so many alternate takes.
Yes.
With stuff that the writers have come up since it was written, or on set in the moment, or ad libs, and sometimes that stuff really works and makes it
right
into the cut.
And he said all these rewrites, actually none of it made it.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's crazy how that goes. But
I do have a question about the timeline of when this was recorded, because
it aired May 13th, 2010.
So it was definitely recorded around the time that Michael Jackson actually died.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, it did. And Michael, our Michael, really goes, he's really trying to.
Yeah, he died less than a year before, in June of 2009.
Just moment of silence. Yeah. Let's think about Michael.
So it would have been around, not far from when they actually shot this.
Mm-hmm. Quite possibly. Yeah. I mean, sometimes they shoot them real quick before they're aired. Sometimes you'll see seasons make drastic changes midway through. I'm thinking of the second season of Lost and those new characters they tried to bring in that they immediately canned after one episode.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I think the Michael Jackson reference just highlights how not good of a person Michael is being in this moment.
Sure.
Because it's also like, dude, come on.
Well, he's also trying to get out of the situation.
Yeah.
He's trying to deflect and deter, and he wants them to stop thinking about this. So he's just, the moment of silence is just so he can get the hell out of the room. And the deflecting is, well, just think about the sad thing that happened instead. This person, this controversial person.
Yeah, forget about me. Focus on this.
Yeah.
The person that.
Focus on this other Michael.
This other Michael.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But, and then we have the Jim and Pam, who are Pam was up all night with Cece.
Yeah, and I love how that kind of intertwines through everything. Like, even with the talking head with Erin in the beginning when they're trying to prepare for Michael's breakup, what they expect to be an inevitable breakup.
Yes.
And she's got Erin helping her because she's so tired, which leads to that great line from Erin about, I don't think you should keep a baby up so late.
So good.
Another, just an amazingly sharply written episode from start to finish. There's so many great lines
here. The Eagles flavors. I don't know where the hell that came from. It might be a thing. Maybe I cake it to limits. My favorite.
I bet those are made up.
Yeah,
made up. But
I think it's just a joke on like the Ben and Jerry theme.
Yes,
you know,
sure. Yeah, yeah.
But Pam's disgust at witchy womanella.
Why did they do
that? I love that so much.
I'm just commenting.
She's like, comment.
But Aaron's like, should I take him back to the store? And he's like, no. They do, and then like she has like a schedule, and they have Mr. Bean playing in the conference room. Yeah. Kevin's loving; he's in heaven.
That too. That is such a great. It's such a great little bit of world building for The Office, because not only is there the unexpected twist of Michael being fine when he walks in, leading to our plot for the episode, just the kind of behind the scenes that it reveals that Pam has done this so many times that she's got it down pat.
And she sure as hell knows that Toby can't be around.
Oh, that when they kick him out of the room.
That's so good.
And notice,
the cold open as well. It's such a good moment.
It's a make-believe shot and then just cast away.
Yeah.
And he never shows up again. They notice that. Like, you never see him again in the whole episode.
I think that he wrote this episode.
He didn't write it, it could have been his idea, because I know like they're all in the writer's room.
That's true.
So it could have been.
Yeah, the writers of course.
I can see
never
Paul Lieberstein saying that, like, I'm out.
Yeah, why not take him out the whole? Yeah. Well, and it's just a great thing to do, to have The Office kind of recognize they don't hate Toby, but they know Michael hates Toby.
Such a good. So going from
that death stare at the start.
Yeah.
Going from the cold open to the flip of Pam and Erin trying to coddle Michael after what they assume is a breakup, and the entire office being fully on board with, yes, we take shifts.
Right.
We know how this works. And then just the immediate flip of everyone's opinion and view Pam essentially yells, are you still dating Donna? And his response is just like,
are you still seeing Donna?
Are you still seeing Donna? Yes. And then he's like, trying not
to
say it.
He blows her off.
No,
yeah.
He's like, no.
Well, she's not invisible.
Ridiculous. She's Den Mother Pam. And then Aaron's the surrogate daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's the grown child who obviously makes a dumb joke about his woman he's cheating with, who's being a ghost.
Then the immediate flip of everyone going, Michael.
Yeah. Yeah. Creed and Meredith are not on board.
Hey.
And we learned a lot about Meredith.
We do. That last sentence is doing a lot of lifting.
We learned Meredith has limits.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, depends on how you refer to limits.
Or morals.
She has some moral compass when it comes to some things.
She has her own moral compass. That's the wording I
think. Yes, everyone in the room.
Everyone. In the room.
All right.
Wow, just the painting she's doing with words there.
I really wish they would have paired that with like a flashback scene of her entering a bar yelling that question out.
Yeah.
But you don't need it. You can imagine it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's better left to the imagination, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, wild, great stuff. And Creed, of course, you got to love any episode where you get two good Creed moments.
We got a full talking head with Creed.
Yeah,
we did.
Yes, we did.
So good.
Yep. And we got a full talking head with Creed. And in the cold open, we get one of his theories. We learned some of his influences. This is the most we learned about Creed in a long time.
I like Oscar's perplexed. That just bullet moves around. How does that work?
Yeah.
It moves on.
Yeah, I love that Oscar just shoots that down.
Oscar's such like a he's sort of just there because he gets like an orange thrown at him later. It's like, why would you throw something wet at me?
Yeah. It did leave a stain on his shoulder.
It really did.
I truly think until we get to like the senator like plot,
yeah,
Oscar is more of a straight man than Jim.
Yeah. Yeah.
True.
Yeah. Yeah. Oscar, they're not really developing his personality. You know, they had that he's
there.
Gay.
He's there to react.
Yeah. Right now. He's gay. He's serious. And that's really it at this point. He's an accountant. I guess he's got a disabled mother. You know,
we can call him the Count.
Yeah. The Count. Right. But we don't get the actually until next season. I think.
No,
we don't get. Is that China? Is that the same episode as China?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah.
He had to be the smartest guy in the room. And then we don't get, and then of course the friendship with Angela is all season 9. So
that's true.
So that's still to come.
We get more emotional depth with Creed and his disgust with Michael.
Yeah.
In this episode,
I'm interested that Creed has this moral compass.
I think he has his limits, and reloading the paper in the printer is just one of them.
Oh yeah.
When he's there in the mud with what could be man or woman. He asks everyone in the mud pit, are you seeing someone? At least I assume.
I do love, this is like the most, like you said, like emotion or like anything we get out of him when he's like, he don't give an F about.
I love that. I love expressive Creed.
It's so funny.
It reminded me of one of my favorite characters from South Park, which was Butters when he's Professor Chaos.
Yeah.
And he has General Disarray, his little sidekick, but like they go around just doing little things that really aren't catastrophic at all, but they just
like Michael eating the cake.
Like him eating the cake, or no, him not reloading the paper, like going against these social contracts. And causing just anger.
Ignoring the norms.
But no real like damage.
It is an important social contract to keep.
Not happy if someone doesn't, if I come over and like, oh, they just decided not, there's a billion reams of paper over here and they just decided not to
just one of Michael's like I get to do what I want moments this episode, which
if he's hungry he's gonna eat
Meredith's cake and then hate that it's lemon.
I like the Meredith birthday callback from season 1.
Yeah,
it actually is her birthday.
Yeah.
And oh, it's lemon.
so not instead of just like celebrating her birthday a month early or whenever,
right?
He ruins it.
Yeah. And mystifies Ryan.
Yeah,
who apparently he sort of has a moral compass too, but not really.
He should never take inspiration from Michael.
No, and this is going on of his infatuation with Aaron, or not, or just lusting after Aaron, and
has no follow through at all.
Absolutely not.
The slightest obstacle, and he just folds.
And then Michael's, you'll get there, baby.
Yeah.
follow through he ever has is with gaslighting Kelly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, the only thing he can deal with is someone who was willing to just completely acquiesce to who he is.
I did like Kelly's line, though. I mean, Ryan, I don't want you hanging out with Michael anymore.
Okay. Yeah. I love his, like, sure, plus doing it already.
I had to tell him that. And then, but Ryan, I mean, he almost stepped on her words to say okay.
Yeah, he was waiting like, oh, good. Yeah. What am I missing? Oh, yeah. Jim and Pam can't stay away.
Oh, I love this. This is such a realistic storyline.
Yeah.
Sure. It is. And, you know, we give Gabe a couple minutes to bore us to death with his
problem. They're trying so hard.
They're trying to
fall asleep.
And they're trying to remind us about the printer fires.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because that will be a issue in the next episode.
Yeah, it was kind of neat how, you know, this arc has been interesting. Of course, not only did we get the very first part of it with Happy Hour coming before Secretary's Day, mm-hmm. but now we kind of had this printer fire thing that's been coming through. We saw it in the cover-up last episode where the printer finally caught fire. And this episode, they don't really mention it except for Gabe and then, of course, in our final scene, mm-hmm. which is really just setting up the finale. And I remember during first watch that this felt like the most unique finale because of that. Yeah. It was kind of a big thing happening behind the scenes that was erupting to the surface this episode.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really go anywhere. I don't know. But it's definitely interesting how this episode left you on a cliffhanger that really, for the first time in a minute, made me go, oh, I have to watch next week.
Is this?
Yeah, it's a good cliffhanger.
Is this one of, like, the lead up to when we get Kathy Bates?
Yeah, she'll be back for the plane scene in the next episode.
Yeah.
Yes, she's going to kill Michael. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Michael almost admits adultery to a news crew.
Yeah.
But he manages to just sound like he might have molested a baseball team.
Yeah. It just sounds like it's real scary guy.
He's really sorry for his bodily functions. And
I do like that as a tag to the whole baseball scene, he just brings the orange slices that he stole from
that.
The kids.
And he's still so damn confident. Like,
yeah.
It's really the car ride there that he finally cracks, you know?
Yeah.
Before that, the entire time, he is unwavering.
He doesn't want to admit that he's wrong.
Yeah. No. Oh, God.
And even having met Donna's husband, he's like, I think that was the inciting moment of his realization. Like, oh.
Well, yeah. And before that, he is... one of my favorite lines, as disgusting as it is, like, I can't believe this guy's making me sleep. I would punch him in the face.
What are you doing to his wife?
I love it, though.
The mental gymnastics are amazing.
Yeah, and I just think it's neat because it just puts on display something that a lot of people do. I think we've kind of all done it in our own way.
But yeah, own little justifications, not to this level, perhaps, yeah, but people do it. It is a human thing.
And that's what The Office does best, is takes universal qualities and just kind of blows them up to shove them in our face and say, hey, look at this.
Look at how far he's taking this shit. Yep. I'm really glad Todd Packer wasn't around for this episode because he might
have just been like a cheer them on.
Let's do it. Yeah. And maybe that's kind of, maybe he was channeling some of that.
See if she's got a married sister for me.
Absolutely. Yeah. It
would have been awful.
I don't know if he would have, because he had that realization with Holly that Packer's not great.
That's true.
And that's going to be another level of maturation next season.
Oh, yeah. That's still to come. Yeah.
The Todd Packer episode. Yeah. Because he sort of disowns the, some shitty behavior, very shitty behavior in this episode, but he's still has allowances for Packer to do it because it's Packer, and he always has his hero essentially, or his, you know, they were the gruesome twosome.
Yeah,
is that what they were?
That's what I call him. Oh, nobody else does, just me.
You know what, it's a fair I do want to highlight that of course Dwight has money buried in a grave.
Oh yeah, deep down the past a certain someone.
Yeah, and who does he have to go? His like grandfather.
Yeah, a grandfather.
Great grandfather.
Cyborg. I mean, it could be a lot of things.
I don't know.
Dead horse.
One hell of a stud fee.
Boy,
that. Oh my god.
He was watching this episode while my husband was finishing up dinner, and he. White said that, and I heard a laugh from the kitchen.
And the little smirk, if that too, like when Angela says, I'm not a farm animal, and he just kind of looks at it. It's like, God damn it, Dwight.
I do.
Freaky deaky, Dwight.
I do have concerns that they are having sex on top of cats.
Yes. In fact, I've got their names Lumpy. Right here. Yeah. Evan, Milky, William, and Lumpy. I love that one of the lumps is a cat named Lumpy. That's such a brilliant writer moment. It's for them.
For them. I will say. And yeah, her stipulations, like,
eye contact. No.
That is not Lumpy. Those are cats.
Those are cats that name names.
Names.
Ember, Milky, William, and Lumpy. I love that Dwight points out how rare eye contact is in nature.
It's always back to the Discovery Channel. I swear to God. Everything is primal. Yeah. And, but yeah, they have actually, if you go to Dunderpedia, they do have like
the contract.
Contract is actually
written. Of course they do. Up.
And what I love about it, too, is there's parts that are blacked out so that you can't see them.
Honestly, I bet the writers and the like art team literally have a real printed contract that is like...
For sure.
For the shooting.
Yes, for sure. Oh, here's a good one. If child is breached, she may be turned in the womb via mind power.
Is that a callback to Jim making him think that he has telekinesis?
Maybe, could be. Yeah, with the umbrella, with Pam's umbrella. Should the child have mutant powers, parties agree that to send the child to the school that aids the child in harnessing talents for good.
So the X-Men.
So harnessing his talents.
Of course, the child could be male.
I mean, it will.
Well, they stipulated in the previous episode. It's simple.
Now,
So X-Men. Yeah, so we've got Blade Runner, X-Men, The Matrix.
Yeah, Benjamin Button.
The Benjamin Button. Every one of those scenarios, I understand why it's in the contract with Dwight, except for the Benjamin Button one.
Poor Angela.
Yeah.
That might have been an Angela pull.
Right.
Maybe so, probably.
It feels like an Angela movie.
That does indeed, yeah.
It does.
It feels like a movie that when they were dating... She made him go see.
I could see
that. Oh, that's a good point.
I could see that. She taught him so much.
I love how this episode, with everything else that's going on, we still managed to get like a 30-second vignette of Dwight just assaulting his own testicles.
So funny.
over and over again.
He's not going to give her the good stuff.
The good stuff. God.
He thinks he can outwit his own sperm.
Extra gross about Dwight calling it the good stuff.
But also very Dwight.
Yeah, oh God, of course. It is so Dwight.
And did he drop a phone book on him?
Yeah.
I think just after hitting them with drumsticks.
With drumsticks over and over again. Yeah. And
it's like how he says they can't stand up to a grown man.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's stronger. Full on assaulting, and they're, you know, it's too bad for Jim and Pam after Daryl gave him the lowdown on the place to sleep.
The sleep place is
ruined. She's so just wistful about as he's describing it. Like,
it's ruined now.
It is ruined now because they have to. They're sitting there like
the shock.
Their faces is so. They're so good.
Here's the thing, though. Daryl should have known where that was in relation to Dwight's spot.
He might have been leading them there just for. He might have known.
No, he was so happy.
He was.
Think that Daryl knew.
Yeah, he wasn't
about
he wasn't,
Dwight and Angela.
That's true.
He ran the warehouse.
Didn't know about the scheduled meetups. Now,
but was he already upstairs when they started meeting down there?
I don't know. Of course, yeah, I don't know. I just love the way he explains it.
No, yeah, because it's back before Sabre.
Yeah, okay.
And
he's just such a deep sleeper.
Maybe. Well, and so. I mean, obviously, he has a love of that spot. And I love his name for it, a restful location. Something.
And it's so warm because of the generators.
Yeah, the heat from the generators.
He's so calm and soothing. He's talking.
It's one of my favorite deliveries in the show. It's such a great moment.
And so different from here, having to hear Dwight and Angela be like, what did you do to yourself?
Yeah.
Did you warm yourself? And
he's like, warmed up? No.
Don't
worry about it.
Everything.
It's like, don't kiss me. It's not in the contract. They, What else am I forgetting?
Oh,
so much in this episode to forget.
There's so many great. It's like the first half. All the writing they weren't doing during the first half of season six, they're doing in this episode.
They are
such a great episode. Yeah.
I do want to note that I would love high fives for every single house chore that I get done.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. That would make me want to do any level of cleaning.
Yeah.
High fives would help.
Yeah.
High fives would be great. Help.
High five.
It would help.
Yeah. Also, because I think Michael only took two of the ice creams when he got back to the office, right?
He did.
Which two do you think he took?
Take it to the limit. Take it to the limit.
There was an orange one.
There was an orange one?
Witchy woman.
Witchy womanella.
And the first one was
Desperado.
He probably did not. He probably took the other two. He probably didn't take Desperado.
Not Desperado.
He was depressed enough. The one that he opened had like orange in it or something.
Oh, man.
Yeah, two of them.
See that?
Yeah, that's true. I love how he just doesn't say a word when he comes back.
Yeah,
and he just so dejected.
I do believe before he leaves that he wants someone in the office to stop him.
Dwight could have stopped.
Oh wow!
I love that. Yeah,
I love it.
But there is that little moment when he stops. And it's very small, but that's what it is. Like, he's just waiting for it. And nobody does.
He's like, is anyone going to stop me?
Don't try to stop me. And then Andy's like, we're not going to try to stop you.
You made up your decision, dude.
Right.
And he's...
Dwight's not going to stop him.
Just those little Dwight inserts.
That's good. Because, I mean, Michael's pretty... That's one of the angriest, kind of actually hurt, sort of hurt, angry Michael. The real emotion that I've seen. You know, it doesn't hit the same when he steps on the George Foreman grill and he's kind of like, you know, he's angry, but it's funny angry.
Yeah.
Do love that he equates cheating to being James Bond.
Yeah.
Who does something,
something like that? James Bond.
Did James Bond talk to men that he was feeding on with their wives?
No,
is that a thing?
No, he would.
I never saw all of them. So.
Michael is confusing James being a womanizer in the sense that he sleeps around a lot.
Yeah,
a womanizer who
knowingly cheats,
pursues married women.
Yes,
right. And apparently, I love how Andy so into the institution of marriage.
Yeah.
It also makes so much sense.
Yeah, he really is. He definitely wants to have a baby.
It highlights the fact that this was shot and literally The Office ended before the gay rights to marriage and all that stuff was in place.
That's true.
Like, I thought about that. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is before that. Because that was 2015.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So this was 5 years before.
I did love the line from the coach dad where he's trying to figure out who Michael and Andy are. He's like, oh, are you Kevin's dad?
Yeah.
I love that.
They're like, no.
Oh, but we're gay for baseball.
Yeah.
But Michael's like, just like facepalm, like, shut up, Andy. Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's like, kind of just has his face up to his,
As confident as he is about seeing this guy when he leaves the office, he is so ready to just disappear when he's actually confronted with
disappear.
He
doesn't like being confronted with his followers.
I mean, he just wants to talk shit about him, giving high fives to his players, and somehow, which he manages to bullshit that one, and then leave.
Yeah,
and then
the hand, like you said though earlier, the handshake is terrible. There was an open fence door
right next
to him.
Yeah, you might have seen Andy standing in it. Points, you know.
Yes. And that's true. He's standing the whole time. They're right there.
But there's something about Michael wanted the barrier. He needed a barrier.
Did need that barrier.
Feels like maybe a Steve Carell decision.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Thinking,
keep it timid.
How funny would this look?
Right. How can we make this a little more awkward?
This be.
Yes.
If I just stuck like my three fingers through.
Yeah.
And grabbed his two.
And kudos to the coach for having that much patience with those two, because you really should have been like,
guys, leave me alone.
I'm working.
Yeah.
But
he's used to dealing with parents.
That's true. If he did think, he probably thought they were parents and he wanted to be nice for them.
Well, and let's be honest too, like every moment that we saw of that guy, he seemed like a kind, patient, pathetic, good person.
Who's very busy.
Yeah.
And maybe a little too busy for his cheating wife.
Good point. Clearly busy helping the kids.
This is a great juxtaposition of Michael being so terrible for the rest of the episode.
Well, the guy's got two arms, two legs, and a heart.
Yeah.
That can be any, that, and he's capable of feeling pain.
He's not, capable of feeling pain.
Because he's not the Terminator.
Like, a lot of what I wrote down was Michael's being, is not being a good person. Michael's being awful. I really don't like Michael in this episode.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to like him.
That's, no,
that's true.
Mission accomplished.
But, and, yeah, but
thankfully you're not
is,
supposed to.
And Michael does the right thing. But what's fascinating at the end of the episode is I'm not sure Michael really learned the lesson here. Because when even when trying to logically look at what happened, he gives that line about doing what's right and being happy. And then for a second, he can't even figure out which one he chose, you know?
I will give him, but I've had that brain fart too, where I'm like, is it the latter or the former? Right? And I think that's kind
of, I don't remember. Did he actually finish
he finished his sentence? And he was right.
Yeah.
He was.
I chose the former.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
He's realizing mid-sentence, oh, I chose not being happy, you know?
That's, and, yeah, that's another thing.
Yeah. It's kind of a... Yeah. It's an interesting moment. It's such an interesting episode for Michael. It's growth. It's some of the worst villainy we've seen out of him.
Right. It's yeah.
It's wild.
It's wild, but he does the right thing. You know, he kind of falls. You know, he does the, and thankfully he does the right thing.
And let's be,
otherwise,
it's an episode that starts with him being mean. I mean, the third reason he throws away the disc is out of spite. Spite.
I mean, if I was looking at that thing, I might think it might have been one of those moo cow things that when you turn it over.
So good.
That's such a good reference. It's like an all, I don't know that they still have those. The kids today still get them, but
they're around somewhere.
It's a mostly universal reference, which is what works so well.
Yeah, and it's better than an ant trap.
Yeah.
I do wonder if in the timeline of this show, since we're on the cusp of season 7, if they were doing a lot of this personal growth with Michael to set up Holly coming back and him leaving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Because he leaves mid season 7, not even that's at the true. End yeah. of season no. 7. So we're yeah. really, really, really not we're far right from Michael leaving.
So it's sort of like they're moving him in that direction.
Like, I bet that he decided he was done and let them know. So they started writing specific storylines to enhance his character development and his mm-hmm. character growth so that they could so see him off so that they could get him to the point where he could be with Holly and everyone could be happy for him.
And then because we get that glimmer of hope in next season, stepping on that, or next episode with Joe, and how can we get Holly back?
Yeah.
Well, Joe's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
So that's
and it doesn't quite work the way that it sounds. Well, and we'll get to it next week when we talk about it. But our next episode,
like, you don't know it's going to happen.
But but she definitely. I always walked away from that episode kind of feeling like, oh, this is going to set up for a quick return, and it really wasn't. It was a very kind of structured thing, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
but doesn't Toby have like a colonoscopy or some shit? I don't even remember.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, her coming back. And then them both leaving, it was pretty quick turnaround, I want to say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. It doesn't take too long.
Well, it's a Christmas episode. So the
Santa Bond.
Yeah. And the season starts with in what, like the fall, like September?
Yeah. After summer. It's after summer because I think that's when they all talk about what they did.
Yeah.
Maybe is that like with the planking?
Oh, it's the planking.
Yeah.
Cold open coming up.
Oh, starts next season.
Yeah.
Episode 1.
Or Michael, you know, says he saw Inception. Or at least he thinks he did.
It looks episodes 11 and 12 are when we see Holly next season.
So yeah, it's really, and then he leaves like not long.
When's Michael's
after that?
It's a little later. It's close. Michael's last 22 is
okay.
By Michael. So 10 episodes later.
10 episodes.
I mean, that's not many episodes for that to grow back into Michael and Holly moving away.
Right. There's the whole ultimatum thing. And and she has to get rid of her boyfriend.
That's
and all
true.
That.
With the AJ stuff.
Yeah. So they do drag it out a little bit. Like, because we're all sitting there just like, come on. These two together.
This feels like a natural storyline to happen with Donna, but also I bet they made it happen because they knew
this had to end.
It's that Steve was leaving.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a really well-written part of this season.
Yeah. He would have signed his contract for the next season.
Already. I can't remember the whole story behind it. And there's rumors that maybe he didn't really want to go and he was sort of, forced out's the right word, but like the management had changed at NBC, where like the people who originally championed the show Like they were, and the ratings weren't as good as they used to be. Like I think they kind of, and then they started trying to bring in
Michael's fault.
No, not at all, not at all. But like it's a little like, I don't know. It could have been
questions like that.
Yeah. That the oral history of The Office. It's the Brian Baumgartner got me. One of the things that got me through the pandemic. It was very good, and they talk a lot about what happened.
Oh,
and yeah, I recommend everyone listen. Yeah, it's a really good one. But they kind of, I think there was sort of some talk about that. But yeah, I think it was probably at least talked about, if not couldn't. But yeah, he would have already signed on. So maybe he hadn't signed on for the next season or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I bet he would have already signed on for season 7
absolutely.
At that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's
good. The way
be...
that the way those like show business contracts work,
right?
You sign on for like. Sometimes X number of seasons,
right.
Or if you don't know how long it's going to last, you sign on for X number of episodes
right. In
a season.
Yeah, this is it's going to be interesting talking about this season because it was such a jolt. Eventually, how this is all going to change.
Yeah,
and
looking
forward to analyzing.
I don't hate Robert California as a character.
Neither. Not now. I hated him back then. Yeah. I hated him back then, but I don't hate him now.
No.
I kind of like it now.
I love Robert California. I think his best episode is when he took on the Avengers. But
and saved.
As we jump back into the chump, what any other moments from this episode you guys want to talk about? There's one I got to mention,
yeah. Which
I think is so brilliant, as risky as it was. Right before Pam calls him Michael out on the cheating,
yeah. When
they try to invite Michael over to their house,
to play
Billy Joel Rock Band and hold their baby.
Was him saying, "Oh, I'm busy," was her sign of,
yeah, this is truly, something is clearly wrong.
You are still seeing
Donna. Yeah. And now I remember, they're all spying on him after he goes into his office, like no tears, like nothing. He's not doing anything. And then Pam's like, he's seeing her. And then Phyllis is the one who, I mean, we can see why she's pissed off later. And she's like, I don't think he'd do that.
Yeah.
She sort of has that.
Well, and that's innocent. A great bit too, because it really sets up the fact that they talk about it. So you kind of get introduced to the idea that, all of the office is not cool with that sort of thing.
Well, mm-hmm. I wonder if Phyllis is really, really not cool with it because she had suspicions that Bob was having an affair with his secretary.
She'd gone through that during that cafe disco. I remember that. Yeah.
If because she had those thoughts,
right?
She's very much
attuned she's in tune to the destruction or the how bad that shit really
is. Yeah, so I'm wondering if there's some of that bleeding in to her
possible
reactions.
Yeah, could be. I did read back to the Rock Band for a second and Billy Joel. There was a writer who said, hopefully that will never happen, because Billy Joel, that wasn't a thing. Even Michael's like, is that a thing?
And no. Just small head shakes. No,
it's not. But this writer, he was snarky in his article and said, hopefully that will never be a thing. And as Billy Joel read that, and he was like, get me on that Rock Band game. He literally was like, and I think he was eventually on the Rock Band.
That's amazing.
That's wild.
Man. Good for you, William Joel.
Billy Joel's such a weird choice for Rock Band. It's mostly piano.
Yeah, true. That's a good point. I don't remember all the. Did they add instruments to the Rock Band?
Yeah, no. It's a rock. Rock Band is not Guitar Hero. Band is you've got fake mic. You've got a guitar. You've got drums.
Right.
I don't think you have a piano.
Yeah. On my way over here, though, it was almost kismet because it's still Rock and Roll to Me came on my shuffle. So, which is a good.
That's a good little.
I was like, William Joel's with us. Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
let's still go see what he was on Rock Band. No, that was a funny little detour. Jim doesn't get a lot of moments, but he does have one in the opening where he's like, where Stanley makes some crack about how about we can make up anything we want in Believe Land or something, or make believe world, and he's like, Stanley, come on, this is serious. And
yeah, that's Jim. That's just Jim playing.
Yeah, and apparently the office feels like a sleeping bag, and that's why they're both passed out. And
I honestly though. When it is too warm, at work, when the room is too warm, I'm just like, I could just close my eyes for like 5 minutes. Yeah. I don't, but it when it feels too warm, it's like,
yeah,
So go to sleep.
Yeah, I better get up and walk around. But who's Stanley to freaking, he falls asleep all the time.
Right.
He ain't no one to judge, but wow. Yeah, good. Chump is a good one. Yeah. We run the gamut of emotions in this one. Yeah, I think
my favorite moment is Creed's talking head, honestly.
I think it is mine too.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's very good.
Yeah, his just outraged. It's just so different for him, but he sells it perfectly.
Those moments with him and Ryan and Michael are just so much fun. It's such a unique angle for what we see of those characters.
Not usually, right? Yeah, it's just something different.
And they're the right ones to interact too, because Creed and Ryan kind of are the bad guys of the office.
Yeah.
I bet that was the writer's like, having the different scenarios and like, this would be an interesting pairing.
It would be. Yeah. And you know, you've really gone wrong if you're Creed and Ryan are like, yeah, dude, this isn't good. you know something.
You know, you're
fucked up badly.
You're doing a bad thing if Creed and Ryan are like, maybe not a good idea.
Yeah.
Confirmed.
Great episode.
Great episode, y'all. Great arc. We'll miss you, Donna.
Yeah, really will.
Not for certain things, but...
Yeah, but no, I will miss the character. She was a unique foil for Michael, a unique person to bounce off of Michael for a while.
They've really hit it out of the park. All the female, like, Michael's love interests, if you will.
Hell yeah.
They've all been great, which is why it's so awesome when they bring him back, when Michael has his soul-searching episode.
Yep, yeah.
So, yeah, this isn't the last we'll hear of Donna.
And here's the right word. We will hear from Donna again.
And I can't wait for that one.
Yeah.
That's going to be a good one.
Yeah. Alyssa, so great to have you back for this arc.
Yeah, thanks
such
so much.
A blast.
We had a lot of fun.
And we talked off mic, though. Figure out what in season 7 you want to talk about.
I have ideas.
We'll have you back very soon.
Yeah.
And Brian, thank you.
I loved it. Hello.
And I love you.
Ah.
Well, I love all of you. What's First Paper Podcast. We're so glad to have you guys listening to the show. We're so thankful for you. And we will be back very soon with the next episode of The Office for you.
Are you comfortable with that? The People Persons Paper Podcast is an OLA Ministries production. The People Persons Paper Podcast is produced by Hilton Price and Brian Sittler. Engineering by Hilton Price. OLA Ministries is owned and operated by OLA Ministries, LLC. Contact Hilton Price and Michael Zampino for more information.